What'd you do today? Anything fun?
I got up and I started taking notes for this movie. I've been doing that for, I don't know, about 5 hours or something like that.
Oh, this movie is not worth taking a lot of notes over.
I seriously have tons and tons of notes here.
Well, there's a lot to talk about in this movie, not because it's good, but because there are some interesting observations.
Why don't we just dive right in?
Okay.
I'm ready.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Real DMC Podcast. DMC stands for Dave, Marks, and Colin. Although today it is only the Real DC Podcast because it's just Dave and Colin. Our next regularly scheduled movie in our progression was going to be 28 Days Later, but Colin and I somehow randomly found some time and apparently some interest to watch the Netflix original Zack Snyder's Army of the Dead.
You ready to play?
There's $200 million in the vault beneath the strip, with a 32-hour window to get it out. Find the safe. This should be a simple in and out.
It's not too late to go back.
They're not what you think they are. They're smarter. They're faster. They're organized.
Oh, scheiße.
You got the window. The window.
Zombie tiger.
That's crossing the line.
You got no wind to hold, wind to hold, no wind to fold.
First of all, before we jump into anything, let me just say, Marcus might have made the good move on skipping this one.
I think you're being a little hard on it.
We can talk about it. I do think it's kind of funny that you and I are here to discuss this particular film, since you and I also did a two-person podcast recently on the Snyder Cut, where we were very supportive of Zack Snyder during that conversation.
Have the winds changed on Snyder?
The winds have changed just a little bit after watching this movie.
I think it's appropriate that this is the Real DC Podcast because Zack Snyder is so part of the DC franchise.
Yes.
And Marcus hates everything superhero, so there you go.
Well, then he would not like the apparent superhero zombie that shows up in this movie. Zack Snyder could not leave his superhero roots. He still had to give the zombie a cape for some reason.
As Tig Notaro would say,
God, was that a zombie in a goddamn cape?
Maybe my favorite line from the movie.
Just some high-level introduction on this movie. So it is a Netflix originally produced film. Let me ask you just quickly, Colin, how many of the original Netflix produced films have you seen?
Hard to say. I don't think I've ever actually cataloged them. Certainly seen a few. Do you have some specific names?
So I think I've seen three. This would at least be the third one. So I've seen this, I've seen Extraction, and I've seen the Project Power.
Project Power, what is that?
You have a pill and you can take the pill and then it gives you 5 minutes of superhero power. That's the effect of the drug.
Oh no, I haven't seen it. I think I know where you're going with this, but please go on.
So my experience so far with Netflix films is that they're striving for mediocrity. And maybe they're trying to support an algorithm so that they have maximum broad-based appeal. I don't know.
I have a different take.
Okay, what's your take?
I think that Netflix just throws a ton of money at filmmakers and says, go crazy. We won't give you any notes. This is what you get. You get movies like Extraction. It's, I don't know, like gluttony. Go for one specific genre thing and leave things like storytelling and writing as a secondary afterthought. As much as studio giving notes to the filmmakers has sometimes ruined movies,
right?
I think that the Netflix model proves that some notes are actually warranted.
Well, and this movie clocks in at 2 hours and 26 minutes. It's representative of what you're saying, which is giving a filmmaker full flexibility.
Yeah, he's got tons of rope there. And what happens when you have a ton of rope? Sometimes you hang yourself with it. I don't think he hung himself with this movie. I actually think it's pretty entertaining. You know, it's got a lot of problems. And I have a lot of things that I want to say about it. And I don't really want to dwell on the things that I liked about the movie. I want to talk about all the stuff that was where I was literally going, oh, come on, really?
This maintains a 5.9 right now on the IMDb. I'm going to guess that over time, it's probably going to even drop a little bit. The 2004 version of Dawn of the Dead, the Dawn of the Dead remake that Zack Snyder did, that maintains a 7.3. And it's interesting because I recall thinking that his remake of Dawn of the Dead was actually pretty good. I am curious now to go back and rewatch that movie to see if I had the correct read there. I'm curious.
Well, it might be another real DC podcast because I actually do want to go back and watch it. I've never seen it.
Okay.
And then I realized again at the end of this movie, it was like, oh, right. Zack Snyder's first film was Dawn of the Dead. Yeah. And he started writing this movie, Army of the Dead, I think 5 years later. Didn't actually get made until like 10 years after he started writing it.
I read that he actually either had the script completed or it was mostly completed by 2009. He was going to make it. They couldn't work out the deal. There was a studio that had it in production and Netflix bought it off that studio. Do you know which studio it was off the top of your head?
Yeah, it was Warner Brothers.
How about zombies and the zombie genre for you? What do you think about zombies?
I liked zombies when I was a teenager. You know, I remember watching the original Dawn of the Dead. That was the one in the shopping mall, right?
Yeah, it was the shopping mall.
Yeah, I really liked that movie a lot when I was a teenager. I've watched The Walking Dead. I thought that was a really good genre series, at least until it went way too long and I stopped watching. I like the whole genre. It's not like, oh my God, I love a zombie movie, right? If it's well made, I will definitely seek that out. So something that I know people are talking about, there's a lot of buzz, I'll go and watch a zombie movie like that.
I actually think that the original Night of the Living Dead is a great movie, particularly the black and white, and it's a fun movie. It shows up around Halloween a lot of times. That's a good one to settle in on.
The ending to that movie is just like such a heartbreaker, and I always remembered that.
The original Romero films, Dawn of the Dead, I think is a great movie. I really do enjoy that movie, and there's several kind of iconic moments from that. The gore for that movie was way over the top.
Oh yeah.
Pretty shocking. And like, I remember the guy that gets his he has his arm in the blood pressure tester, and then it gets eaten off and he gets ripped off and his arm's still sitting there, things like that.
Entrails is what I remember.
Day of the Dead I think is pretty good, and then afterwards he made, I think it was a Diary of the Dead. I think they started going down in quality. I will, however, promote a very positive recommendation for Return of the Living Dead. I think that movie is fantastic. Have you ever seen that movie? Kind of punk rock zombies?
I watched the trailer for it. I know you said that it's a great 80s.
Oh, it's total great 80s horror. Yes. It's a classic 80s horror.
And I watched the trailer for it and I was just like, no, I'm not going to waste my time. Sorry. I'll leave it to you and your nostalgia.
Maybe I'll pick that one as my DMC pick and force you and Marcus to watch it.
Okay, watch it first. And then if you want to subject it to us, then it's okay.
Well, it's a better movie than this movie.
You know, this is a really well-made movie. I mean, you have to say that. And it will be a favorite, I think, for anyone under age 16. They haven't been exposed to all the cliches and the ripoffs and the homages to other movies that are obviously favorites of Zack Snyder's. Being that we're in the same age group, you know, he's only like 5 years older than us. You sit there and you're watching this movie and you're like, oh, okay, that's from that movie, that's from that movie, that's from that movie. This whole movie is a ripoff of another movie.
Right.
So we'll get into that. But if you're 12 to 16 and you like gory movies, you like zombies, you like seeing people blown apart, and you haven't seen those classic movies from the 80s, this is a great movie because you're seeing it all for the first time.
For the most part, the visuals are fun. There are a couple small things that I think are actually pretty well done. I love, for example, the zombie tiger.
I love the zombie tiger.
Zombie tiger's great, especially when you're playing with the whole idea that it's Vegas and it's one of the Siegfried and Roy tigers that got out and became a zombie. So that's pretty funny. The opening montage for this movie is great. Like, the best part of the movie is the first 3 minutes during the credits, in my opinion.
The credit sequence is fantastic, I have to say. And he's a master,
really good
with them. Yeah, yeah. He should just do that for all these other movies. Maybe not do the rest of the movie, but I kid Zack Snyder. I actually do like your work.
Actually, I like Snyder too. I just this movie I found to be a little frustrating, honestly. Partially because you want to just do a quick cliche-a-thon? So just go through and call out some of the cliches in this movie?
I mean, go ahead. I mean, I didn't really like mark down all the different cliches, but you know, I'm sure they'll come to mind as we're talking about.
Here, I'll just roll a few off.
Just roll a few off, please.
Okay. The hero, Dave Bautista, right? Former Medal of Honor winner, of course, just like Snake Plissken in Escape from New York. After he got away, he has a job flipping burgers, because that's where all of your super hardcore military trained dudes end up. They end up working as short order cooks somewhere.
And they made this very clear in the opening credit sequence, is that all of these badasses who rescued people and ultimately made it out of Las Vegas, they were like regular everyday people. I don't know what it was that Dave Bautista did in his life.
Right.
You know, he had a family and he wore goofy Christmas sweaters. You've got to think some of these guys actually did have military training. Van der Rohe, he had a like PhD in philosophy or something like that.
Right.
But also he likes to hit the gym. And a lot of the characters in this movie, especially Dave Bautista, apparently you can't get them out of the gym. It is one cliche after another.
Let me just hit a couple more if you don't mind. He's the tough soldier. He had to kill his wife, actually. And then, of course, that leads to a bad relationship with his daughter. How many military protagonists have had bad relationships with their daughters?
Oh, of course, yes.
You have the specialized weapon dude. You do have Omari Hardwick, who plays Van der Rohe. He has his big saw. They show him using it in the beginning. He never actually uses it during the movie, though. That's absolutely crazy to me.
Somebody else used it, but they actually used it for what it was meant for.
They use it to cut through a wall.
Yeah, it's a giant concrete saw. Which I'm thinking, like, don't you think you maybe, like, put a nice ripped edge onto that blade? You know, you might do a lot more damage with it, but okay, right. I get it.
It's Jesse Ventura with Old Painless, right?
So right,
specialized
right.
Specialized weapon dude. So let's just name the movies that this is actually based on, this movie. It's a combination of Aliens, yeah. Predator,
yeah.
Ocean's 11.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of Deep Rising that shows up in here at one point.
Die Hard, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Did we mention Raiders Aliens? I mean, this whole movie is Aliens.
It is Aliens, basically, yes.
And then a nice little homage to An American Werewolf in London.
Oh, yeah, and the opening attack. Yep. So another one, so head bandanas, specifically red head bandanas that are worn by military or combat personnel.
You mean specifically Vasquez? Like, Chambers is Vasquez.
You could have lifted Vasquez out of Alien and dropped her into this movie, and it's the exact same character. And we will spend a little time on that.
It's good stuff, but we'll get to a lot more of that.
I think in movies with soldiers, that's the only time you ever see head bandanas being worn like that. No one ever wears a head bandana like that otherwise. It just doesn't happen.
No, but you know, technically these aren't real soldiers.
No.
They're just badasses who do soldiering better than real soldiers.
That's right. They're badasses. Okay, a couple more. You got the military convoy that is transporting a bad thing that they don't know what it is.
You got to love that. It's always super secret. No one knows what's going on.
I love that you have nobody in the convoy that's actually protecting this thing understands what it is. That seems like maybe a security flaw. Maybe not the best approach. So you have the geeky tech guy. So in this case, it's a German guy who is the safe cracker.
Oh, it's Theo. It's Theo from Die Hard.
Actually, I have in my notes right here. Theo in Die Hard, comma, the dude in Dread, comma, the Italian job, and I said the hacker from any movie. That's who this character is.
Yeah, it's great.
You have the one security guy from whatever group that's added to the team at the last minute. So that's Carl Weathers from Predator.
We pick up their trail at the chopper, run them down, grab those hostages, and bounce back across the border before anybody knows we were there. What do you mean, we? I'm going in with you, Dutch.
In this case, it's some relatively nondescript guy who you're never clear exactly what his mission is.
You're talking about Martin. He also happens to play Carter Burke from Aliens.
He shuts the door.
He's there with the team because even though the idea is that they're going to do a heist and they're going to steal like this $200 million, he actually has another more important goal that nobody else knows about.
Right. It's the secret, double secret mission. And speaking of that, so you have the double cross, right?
Yeah.
So you know going into this that the military dude is going to double cross him. And I'll just throw out two more. An unfortunate trend of involving YouTube influencers in these movies as roles. Popular person on YouTube, who in this case is the headshot dude or whatever, or he goes in and makes videos about him with zombies. And that's an unfortunate trope that started to creep into a lot of these movies.
Yeah, let's just drop that. I don't want to see that anymore in any more movies. If it's a movie where Logan Paul gets killed, I'm all right with that.
You're in? Okay. So Dave Bautista references that he wants to open a restaurant or have a food truck. And over the course of the movie, maybe I should make lobster rolls or maybe I should do tofu or this or that. And that is definitely an established trope where someone has, you know, the dream or the vision for the alternate thing they want to do. And they keep thinking about it and thinking about it. And of course, you know, that means they're never going to get there. They're just going to die.
Oh, the foreshadowing. Yes.
It's like Sam Neill was never able to drive around Montana in his RV throughout October. I mean, that is this movie in a nutshell. It is take Predator, take Aliens, take every cliche you have, drop them in a blender, see what comes up, form it back into a script, and then shoot it. And then shoot this fucker, because that's actually what this movie is.
So Zack Snyder actually was the director of photography for the film.
Yeah, I saw that actually.
I don't really know if I can critique it or not. Maybe it was good. I did notice he was trying to do certain things with it, especially like when the team came together and then they arrived at the camp. outside of the walls of Vegas.
Yeah.
He was like focusing in on like a specific character, and then everyone else around him was kind of blurred out. And it wasn't that they were not in focus. They were being intentionally blurred out. And I read somewhere that he was collected all these old cameras because he really wanted to have like a soft feel for this zombie movie instead of like that very hard feel that other films had had, other zombie films had had. And I don't know if this was part of that attempt to do that, but I think it sort of went away because I didn't notice it anymore. Did you notice this at all?
To me, what sticks out more is the city landscapes. I don't think the city landscapes look particularly good. And apparently this is also the first film that Snyder shot digitally, like in its entirety.
Yeah.
How much of that is playing a role here in terms of what the city looks like?
I don't think it played a role at all because all of those scenes of the city, they're all done with CGI.
The city backdrops or the landscapes don't look particularly good. They don't look crisp at all. You know, even as a comparison to some of the stuff in the Snyder cut. It all looks a little washed out. Hmm. It does look soft to me. Like it's not particularly crisp.
Maybe that's the cameras that he used.
It's a certain type of Canon lens, I guess, to put on a camera.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The music. I actually liked the music. They used a lot of good songs in it. So it had that, you know, the Elvis song, Suspicious Minds. Zombie, of course, by the Cranberries.
Right. Yeah. I like that. I thought that was funny.
It was really good. It was well done. A Doors cover for a cover of The End. And
that was an interesting cover of The Doors.
It was an interesting cover, yeah. Bad Moon Rising by John Fogerty. And
yeah, I was wondering if the John Fogerty, The Bad Moon Rising, was specifically a shout-out to American Werewolf in London.
I wonder. Plays a key role in that movie. And then, you know, just in terms of reviews for the film, I didn't really delve too deep in it, but I was a little surprised to see that it got generally positive reviews.
Yeah.
There was one review. It was from the Time Magazine reviewer, Stephanie Zacharek, summarized the film by writing that it was, quote, too scattershot, perhaps too derivative, and definitely too long. But it's definitely a movie, as well as a perfectly acceptable turn-off-your-brain entertainment. I think that sort of sums it up for me.
Look, I mean, I know that I'm coming across as being pretty negative. Ultimately, it's fine, I guess, is kind of...
It was a fun watch. I actually watched it over a couple of nights. But is it a movie I'm going to put on again and rewatch? Eh, probably not.
No. It's a movie that I would watch if I was on a plane.
What if there were snakes on the plane?
All bets are off at that point, okay. So unless Samuel Jackson's there to save me.
Cast.
Batista, front and center, the main name here. But I am a Dave Batista fan. I love him as Drax. I will give a shout out to the movie Stuber, if you haven't seen it. That's a recommendation. He proves that he has really good comedic timing in that movie. Also that he can just kind of play something other than your standard action hero. I actually think this movie does him a bit of a disservice, forcing him to act in some scenes that are just so ham-fisted in terms of the emotional stuff with his daughter that I don't think those work at all. So I don't know that it's terribly helpful to Dave Bautista, but I do like him overall as an actor. Ultimately, he's fine in this role, but there's just not much to it other than your standard action archetype dude.
That's basically my assessment as well. I really like Dave Bautista. He's a great straight man in comedies. I did watch Stuber and I thought it was really, really funny. And then I love him as Drax in Guardians of the Galaxy. I was sort of hoping for it was going to be more of that type of role, and it really wasn't. There was some comedy in this. It wasn't really a comedy. I don't know if it was the writing or if maybe he just doesn't have the acting chops to do the dramatic roles. I know he's trying to seek out dramatic roles. I'll give him a pass on this and say, well, it's probably just the writing.
Amari Hardwick, he plays Vanderhoe. He might have the best performance in the movie for me personally.
Yeah, I think so.
Lots of really good charisma there. He has some fun interaction with
Dieter.
Yeah, Dieter. So although that also becomes a forced relationship, how they react to each other isn't really justified based on the fact that they've known each other for 24 hours or whatever. I want to see more of him as an actor. He definitely caught my eye.
I'll call out Garrett Dillahunt, who played Martin, essentially the villain on the team. Love him as an actor. And then he has a fabulous death. Death by zombie tiger in the movie.
So. Yeah. He has the best death in the movie, I think. They show what the tiger does, like where it just clamps down on his head and just basically rips it to pieces. That's pretty good.
That was the head crush that I was looking for at the end of Texas Chainsaw Massacre that I didn't get. I got the head crunch by tiger. Did you know anyone else, any of the other actors in the film?
Hiroyuki Sanada.
Yep.
He's been in a lot of stuff, and he's very recognizable when he comes on the screen. I think he has a really commanding presence. He had a very bit part in Avengers Endgame. The Last Samurai is the movie that I think, or when I think of him, that's one of them.
And I have not seen that.
Sorry, The Last Samurai, if I said Lost. But he's also in Lost, which is why it's mixing that up. There's a certain element of cool that guy brings when he's on the screen. It's kind of hard to describe, but he's cool. That's what I'll say.
Yeah, he's like one of my favorite character actors nowadays. And when he shows up, I'm like, oh, yes, it's him. I thought it was kind of funny when he walked into the warehouse doing like this slow clap. So there's another cliche for you.
The last person I would highlight is Tig Notaro. She was a replacement for Krista Ella.
Yeah.
So I hadn't really been following any of that, but apparently, and I don't even know what the scandal is. Do you know what the scandal is? Something happened with him and underage girls or something?
I think this was last summer that he was pursuing underage girls for sex and sexually harassing women. I actually don't know Chris D'Elia. I think I've probably seen him in something, but I didn't really recognize him. But they shot the movie with him. They just decided they couldn't do this. They cut him out and then filmed Tig Notaro. So I guess they reshot certain scenes, used green screen to insert her into some group shots. I never would have known.
Her character is a lot of fun. The essence of her, of who she brings to the screen, which is not giving a fuck about anything. I liked her intro, for example. Her intro I thought was pretty fun when they go to recruit her.
$2 million.
What?
That's my share. That's just for me. $2 million if it pans out. 100% I'm in. Yeah.
You don't want to know, you know, the risks or?
Why would I want to know the risks? $2 million? It's a lot of cash. Listen, I hate my life so deeply. If I had $2 million, my life would change drastically. Yeah. Thank you. Yes.
You sure you don't want to know?
I bet it has something to do with a helicopter.
Yeah.
I'm the helicopter guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where do I sign?
Okay.
I'm in.
Thanks, bud.
It's those helicopter pilots. They're always the ones who are a little bit off. Did you know that Tig Notaro is a comedian?
Yeah, because actually that's what I recognized her from.
Yeah, so that's basically where I knew her from. I don't think, I've probably seen her in like something else, but really not much. This is like the first movie that I've seen her in.
All right, anybody else in the cast that you want to highlight?
Ella Purnell, who plays Dave Bautista's daughter, Kate Ward.
I wasn't quite sure if she was a slightly digitally altered Zooey Deschanel.
Well, she's got those big eyes, you know.
So cast is not overly important in some respects, because once you get past a couple of the main characters, you know that everybody is there just to be picked off one by one.
And that's what happens. Yeah.
Want to just jump into this thing, go through it?
Well, I do have some questions. I don't know if we should save those till the end. Certainly throughout the movie progression, I will be calling out specific classic movie homages or ripoffs. I don't know how you want to frame it, but I'll be calling those out.
I want to call them out as we go, and you can ask the questions along the way.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. There's a military transport going down the road, and they have some unknown cargo. Not super smart to have your military guys not necessarily aware of what it is that they're transporting. It's kind of fun because they mentioned, for example, the Staff of Ra as one of the things, right? So there's a callback to Raiders of the Lost Ark, which that's kind of clever. I did like that.
That whole conversation was kind of interesting because, is it the Holy Grail? Is it the headpiece for the Staff of Ra? Right. You know, is it an alien? You know, you and I would be having this conversation if we were driving down the road.
There's a car that's coming in the opposite direction, and the guy he's receiving a blowjob, so he's not necessarily focused on the road, and he ends up driving his car straight into the front of the car that's transporting the zombie, what ends up being a container that has a zombie inside. No reference to the mythology of was there a zombie outbreak previously. I don't know that there's any relationship between this movie and, say, previous Romero universes or any other zombie universes. Feels like kind of a one-off, so you never really have an understanding what the origin of this zombie is.
The fact that it was being transported by the military out in the desert in Nevada, is it coming from Area 51? Is this some sort of experiment on a soldier? Because what comes out is quite clearly a soldier who has mutated somehow.
He has dog tags.
He's got dog tags on. He's got a buzz cut. He's got camo pants on. He does not move like a zombie, traditional zombie. He moves like a leopard.
Well, he's superhuman, just strength and speed and all that.
Yeah. Is he like a certain sort of alien hybrid? Was it some sort of virus? Like, who knows? We don't know.
No. And the other thing this does is it starts to establish the mythology. You know, he bites and attacks a couple of the soldiers and they end up transforming into zombies relatively quickly. The activation time of becoming a zombie is kind of in the minutes. That's the reality that's getting created here.
Before the crash, when the newlyweds are in the car, the bride starts hanging out the window and go, "Ooh!" All I could think about was, oh God, Hereditary.
It's so funny. I thought about the same thing. That's crazy. I thought the way that they were setting up that shot, there must have been some intention there, because I was expecting for her head just to get cleaved off when the truck went by.
I know, right?
Yeah. But that did not happen.
when their car collides with the transport, it was like the biggest fireball I've ever seen.
I can only assume that the guy was carrying like a 50-gallon drum of kerosene in his backseat or something like that.
Were they carrying like 50 tons of incendiary bombs in that truck? Like, it was ridiculously big. After the accident, you know, they report in and say, oh, we got into this accident. The soldiers report in. There's a female soldier on the other end of the walkie-talkie. She's obviously very concerned.
All right, listen carefully. Gather whoever can walk or move and get away from the payload immediately.
Wait, what are you telling me to do?
Shut the fuck up and listen to me. Get your men out of there, horsemen. If they can't move, leave them. Do you understand? Get away from that location now. Do you copy?
Yeah, I copy.
I did want to call out the homage to An American Werewolf in London, whereas the two soldiers, they're now like the only surviving soldiers, and they're like fleeing from the zombie, and they run out into the desert. They can just like hear it around them, and one of them trips and falls down, and which is a total tension breaker. And then the guy who's standing extends his hand out, and while he's doing that, he gets tackled by the zombie off frame. It's exactly almost verbatim from An American Werewolf in London.
It's and just even, like what happens to poor Jack on the moors.
You can hear the zombie like growling around them, and it sounds like the werewolf down on the moors. So obviously very intentional, but it was a nice callback.
That was fun. And I do think the scene of them up on the desert looking down over Vegas, that's a cool shot.
When I was looking at the trivia on IMDb, somebody wrote that you could see two UFOs in the sky above Vegas. No, those are helicopters. So don't trust whatever you read on the internet, in case you haven't already figured that out.
Really? Side note on that one. So apparently Jeremy Renner's Wikipedia page said that he was an actor, musician, and velociraptor.
It's good stuff. He's not a velociraptor?
Apparently he's not a velociraptor, so that's another example of not being able to trust everything that you can read on the internet. This does cut to the opening montage that is a lot of fun. It's set over music, and there's lots of slow-mo and some pretty cool visuals of zombies getting gunned down. This is where you see the big saw in action. Even, you know, kids getting munched, right? So there's a few moments where you're kind of like, oh, okay. I don't even know who Dave Bautista is looking at in terms of who the person is, but there's a woman and her child, and she's clutching her child, and they pull the lever to drop this huge cargo crate and just smashes them flat. So there's a lot of that. I did like the opening credits.
Since you brought that up, this is one of the questions that I had. There is this one woman who's a soccer mom, and she's a total badass. She dies at the end of the opening credits when they close off the city, and the shipping container falls on her as she's being tackled by zombies. They don't mention her at all after that. And she's like one of the stars of the opening sequence. Like, who is she? And was she written out later on? Or
so Scott Ward, that's the name of Batista's character. I thought it was Scott Ward's wife and daughter when I was watching it. I assumed that they had some sort of relationship and that he had to make the decision to sacrifice them, or, you know, kind of maybe even put them out of their misery at that point. Cuts back later, and there's a scene where you see Dave Bautista's character have to shove a knife through his wife's head in front of his daughter, and that's why he thinks his daughter doesn't like him.
She was turning into a zombie and attacking his daughter, and he had to kill her in front of his daughter.
Even right now, as we're sitting here talking, I have no idea who that woman and her child was at the end of the credits.
I feel like there was some scene that they cut out where they talked about her and her significance to the team, because I think at that point they had sort of coalesced into a team where they're trying to save people, and she was like the last team member who didn't make it out at the very end. But then they never really even reference her later on. Right. So I was scratching my head a bit on that. One of the things I liked about the credit sequence was that it really sort of reminded me of World War Z, the book, not the movie.
Yeah.
Have you read that book?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know how they have some illustrations in there? And there's a couple of illustrations where the military is taking on zombies like in the streets of a major city. And it just reminded me of like, oh, this is so much like that.
Right. Quick digression then. So one of the problems is that zombies would never actually be a problem. If you had this zombie outbreak and you actually have them surrounded, just go put a couple thousand of your best troops up on the edge of the wall and you can clear the city. No problem. Zombies actually pose no real threat, right? You send one tank in there and just sit there and drive over people all day. Zombies cannot get into your tank. I don't know. It just, that's the one problem with the whole zombie concept, that just, it doesn't really work.
So this is another one of my questions. Yeah. Why did they have to nuke Vegas, right? They could have just gone in with tanks. They could have gone in with choppers and just sat there and methodically dropped bombs on all of the zombies who were congregating outside.
Right.
They could have used fuel air explosives, could have used the Moab, the mother of all bombs, take everything that in the arsenal and go out there and just basically methodically take them all out, do it from the air. And then we got things controlled on the ground. You know, you've got tactical control over the ground. And then you start going in and exterminating like building by building because you don't have these huge mobs of zombies, right? The dumb thing to do is to try to go in like they did. You've got tens of thousands of zombies coming at you with a limited military force. They were overwhelmed, right? But now that you've got the city walled off.
It's a turkey shoot.
Yeah.
It could just be practice, right? You could get like your sniper team up there and just sit there and just drill guys in the head. It's like real life sniping practice. I mean, it just, that's the one problem with zombies. And Dawn of the Dead, if you go back to that, even a better example, because in that case, those things are really slow moving. Imagine a zombie uprising in America. With everybody with the guns we have, it's over in 3 minutes. Zombies are gone.
It's easy to get the shamblers. It's the alphas that you have to worry about. But that's where like you bring in your snipers because they can get them. But the other question I had just about nuking Vegas was, where the fuck were the insurance companies? They should have been out there lobbying Congress and the White House. They're going to lose all that property. Go in, just kill zombies, do as little property damage as possible. You nuke it, you're never going in for another 200 years. It's off limits.
There's no way you ever actually get a wall up around the city in time to contain the spread.
Totally agree with that as well. That was
this idea that somehow they were able to go in and just build this wall of 3 cargo containers. Because even thinking about, I mean, how many cargo containers would you need to be able to do that? So the logistics just don't really work.
Las Vegas is a big city. That would be an enormous perimeter.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So there's a few problems with the zombie logic, but we'll just blow past that and get back to the fun.
Yeah.
So Bly Tanaka shows up and he makes a proposition to Dave Bautista's character, Scott Ward, to go in and try and secure $200 million cash that's in a safe in exchange. Then he'll get $50 million for doing that. Imagine if those guys went in there and took that money. Would they ever actually give it to Tanaka? Probably not.
Yeah, that was one of the reasons he wanted Martin on the team. There's also risk that if they do steal all his money and they survive, then Tanaka goes after them to recoup that money. This whole idea, it just reminded me of Heat. If Roger Van Sant asked Neil McCauley to sell him back the bearer bonds, because he'd already collected the insurance. So there's a Heat call out for you.
The casino is worth the risk.
Exactly.
When Tanaka comes in and he starts talking about what's going to happen in terms of the fact that they are going to nuke Vegas, again, I think an absurd premise, but the exposition in this movie is delivered so clunkily every time it shows up.
It's all very matter-of-factly without any sort of
it's not as if it's integrated organically into the actual dialogue. It just comes across as real clunky. This is exposition. Okay, now exposition complete. Move on with the story.
Right. Nuking an American city would have a lot of drama to it. It would be a dramatic moment when you learn about this. But no, I think you just learn about it from CNN at first.
At one point, a little bit further along in the movie, it's kind of fun that you can tell it's someone taking a shot at Trump because they say that Vegas was going to be nuked on the 4th of July, and they says because the president thought it would be cool.
I know. I couldn't help but think that that was a total Trump reference. You know, Tanaka says that that Scott had won the Congressional Medal of Freedom.
Medal of Honor?
I think it was Medal of Freedom because he's not in the military. But it was one of those medals, those high-up medals, right? And why did he say he received that? Because he saved the Secretary of Defense. There was a scene in the opening credits that you see them pulling out the 4-star Air Force general who's like in uniform from the zombie hordes, and he's carrying a big black briefcase and stuff. If that was, what the fuck was he doing there?
Maybe it was just on vacation.
First of all, the Secretary of Defense is not in the military.
Maybe he was just doing some gambling and whoring.
Yeah, so that doesn't work. Why is he there? What is he doing there? It's like negotiating? Was he ready to sit down with the zombies and negotiate? It was just very odd. It was very strange.
No, he was trying to get his comps in before Vegas fell. He had some meal vouchers and a few extra chips he was going to get if he went to certain casinos.
Could be, maybe.
The team building part of it, right? Because I love the man on a mission.
Yeah.
Right. And there, I love the whole idea of building a group of people that have specialized skills. It's one of my long-term favorite constructs for a movie. And Ocean 11 actually does this pretty well. They take the time to introduce you to the characters. The characters all have quirks. They all have specialized skills. I think about the Guns of Navarone or the original Magnificent Seven. Those are all movies that know how to do this. The most recent Magnificent Seven and this movie are a good example of how not to do it. Because all the characters come on and they're introduced in 30, 45 seconds. You don't get to know them at all. There's nothing really necessarily distinct about them. And so they become way too interchangeable. With the Safecracker, the exception of you know what the Safecracker is there for, everybody else is just kind of an entity. It frustrates me because I think that they had enough time in this movie if they wanted to, where they could have spent more time developing the characters, like the individual characters and their skills. It would have been to a better result, I think.
Totally understand what you're saying, and I think you're absolutely right. I couldn't articulate it at the time, but to me it just felt slow. You were sort of slogging through this, and this should be like the fun part of the movie. And they really fumbled it because I'm starting to think back, well, maybe it seems slow because, yeah, you don't really know what each position is. What is their particular skill set? They had a great opportunity and they missed it, with the possible exception of the Safecracker.
The Safecracker and the pilot. Those are the two that you know what their specific team function is and what their skills are.
Yeah.
And by the way, both of those characters end up having quirks or whatever that make them more interesting and stand out a bit.
Speaking of the Safecracker, I've got some issues with this because I'm like, are you really just going to walk into a locksmith store and find a Safecracker? This is your plan to crack this enormously secure casino bank vault? You drive to a locksmith store. Lucky Dieter had that shop nearby that they could just drive there. It just seemed like there wasn't a lot of thought behind it. And they completely lucked out by finding him.
Not only that, but they cracked the safe without any required tools.
It's just him and he's listening to it.
Just listening, yeah. James Caan out there had to go hire a guy to go build a tool just so he could burn through the safe. And, you know, that was an 8 to 12 hour process for him to get into it. And that was in the late 70s. So you assume that safe technology has probably improved a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
But he's able to do it just with his ear. He's an expert safe cracker. Give him that.
Moving on.
They show you the surrounding area around just outside of Vegas. And there are some kind of refugee camps. Of course, they have the total stereotypical asshole in charge. The guy who ends up getting sacrificed.
Oh, Burt Cummings.
He is shown to be like a total domineering asshole. The other thing is you're introduced to Dave Bautista's daughter. She is the shining light who's trying to do all good things for the refugees in the camp. So there's a coyote there's a woman who goes in and out. You know, she knows the routes in and out of Vegas. And for whatever reason, she was at a goth rave and then she decided to become a coyote and did not take her makeup off because she's looking a little strung out. She's got dark circles around her eyes. I don't know. How come this sort of character is never just someone who's normal looking? I don't really get it. A little goofy, I thought.
Seeing her in action, I'm thinking like pretty much anyone could do that job if they just knew which shipping container to go into.
Right. They get in there and all of a sudden she starts dropping really clunky exposition.
If we want to go further, we have to make a trade.
What?
Trade?
No trade.
Really? Yes. An offering to show our subservience.
What are you talking about? They don't think.
Shoot this bitch.
If they come, we kill them.
You don't understand.
Shoot her.
They're not what you think they are.
Shoot her in the face.
We're not talking about Chandler's here. You're right. They don't think. They just move and eat.
No.
But we're talking about the other ones.
The Alphas.
Yes.
No.
They're smarter. They're faster.
No.
They're organized. Straight out of your fucking nightmares.
Please.
You all keep talking about the city like it's their prison. It's not.
No.
It's their kingdom.
Like she's just basically laying out, oh, here's what's going to happen for the next 20 to 30 minutes in the movie. And it's just, it's super clunky. I don't think it works.
She got an A in anthropology.
Yeah, so she's a zombie expert, apparently.
Apparently.
She starts leading the team into Vegas, and then all of a sudden you have a character show up who's the alpha, who is apparently the mate of the main bad guy zombie. And for whatever reason, she's dressed exactly like the Enchantress from Suicide Squad.
I don't remember that because I thankfully have purged all memory of that movie out of my brain.
Why does she have to be sort of like a witch? I don't know. It's kind of, it's...
She's the Scarlet Witch. I assume that she was part of some Cirque du Soleil show that was playing at one of the casinos and she became an alpha. Because it was kind of funny to see show people dressed up as and turned into zombies with their costumes still on. So
I think you make this movie so that you have the zombie Elvis shambling around. You're going to set it in Vegas. You know you're definitely going to do that. They carry that theme throughout the movie with showing other people that have gone through the same sort of transformation and still have their clothes on.
Swear to God, when we first got introduced to I'll just call the Alpha Queen, because I think that's how she's credited.
Yeah.
Because you know how the zombies, all they do is like very guttural like growls and screeches.
Right.
And I swear to God, she said, Garland. Got him. So it's a little callback to Lord of the Rings.
Didn't catch that. One thing I will give her credit for is I do think that her physical performance is actually really good. You know, she seems very predatory. I think the physical acting that she is doing, I think, is actually pretty good. Again, I think the costume is, it's fine, but it looks a little goofy.
Yeah, I agree.
So she drags Burt Cummings back to the casino. This is where you're introduced to the, you know, kind of the big baddie. So it's the guy who broke out of the containment.
I have questions about this, so just continue on.
He has a spear, he has a cape. You don't really understand exactly what his relationship is to anybody except for sort of being the ruler, right? And apparently he's the one that he can bite and transform the other zombies into alphas. And I guess if an alpha bites somebody, maybe they become a shambler, I guess. Is that the mythology that they're setting up?
I sort of figured if an alpha bit you, you'd become an alpha. But then how do the shamblers get...
Yeah, how do the shamblers ever show up?
Maybe he gives them a specific bite to become an alpha. Like, you're worthy enough to become an alpha, so...
Yeah.
And then everyone else is just a shambler? I don't know. So I kept wondering about him. Was he the same guy in the beginning? The soldier, the super soldier who escaped? Because he didn't look the same. I mean, but definitely he had long hair.
Yeah, his hair had grown.
So if you're a zombie, your hair grows? Really?
Don't hair and fingernails keep growing for a while after you die or something like that?
Well, not that long, right? Oh, maybe. Okay, that's a good explanation. I'll take that. But I was really confused because I suddenly, you know, you go from G.I. Joe with a buzz cut and now you're seeing like Scott Stapp from Creed. I was like, is this the same guy?
Is it? Am I going to hear my own prison in a second here?
So it turns out he actually has a name. His name is Zeus, and I was like, well, why is his name Zeus? Well, it's because in the opening credit sequence, he stops in front of this huge statue of Zeus that's out in front of the Olympus Hotel casino, which is where they end up, all the zombies end up living? I don't know. So I guess he decided to model himself after Zeus, and that's where I think he gets the sash and the cape and the spear from. He's now transformed himself into Zeus. Okay. I think we'll rewatch the credits a couple times in order to figure this all out.
Whose head was on the pike that he had?
I have no idea.
Towards the end of the movie, he puts on a helmet, which that was I really don't think works. So,
I know.
So the physical performance of that particular actor, I think, is pretty good. He handles the physicality of the zombie and tilting his head and showing his teeth and really well done.
He's a staple of Zack Snyder's stunt crews. He's a stunt doubled for Superman and Batman.
Maybe he just needed to have the cape on to feel that he knew he was working on a Zack Snyder movie.
I think so.
Because I don't why you give the dude a cape is just, I mean, come on, man. That's pretty goofy.
I know. I'm with Peters on this one. Does that zombie have a goddamn cape on?
Yeah, there you go.
Good stuff.
Oh, and by the way, there was this whole moment where Dave Bautista's daughter, of course, has to join the team to go in and randomly find the three refugees that were going into the casino to try to get some money, which is, by the way, it's a completely ancillary, tacked-on plot that they use basically just to have her randomly separate herself from the team at the end of the movie. It's a pretty dumb plot device, in my opinion, but whatever. She decides to go into zombie land, doesn't take the time to gear up at all, so doesn't put on any kind of like a flak jacket, or she's basically just wearing a tank top and carrying a pistol. She's good to go, though. There's a fun scene. So the coyote ends up sacrificing Burt Cummings by shooting him in the leg and leaving him for the witch. That was pretty well done. I like that. The concept is pretty funny.
Yeah, but you also knew he was going to come back at some point,
right,
and attack Kate because you almost attacked her in the camp. You know, you could tell, like, they were setting this whole thing up where the guards were abusing their power and they were sexually assaulting the female camp dwellers. I don't know that you really needed a lot of that stuff. I think there's like a lot of under the current political stuff around like immigrants and xenophobia and all this stuff that they just sort of set up and then like left.
Right.
And it was like, okay, this is the stuff that you should cut. Right.
It feels very ham-fisted and tacked on and it's not doing justice to anything.
Yeah.
And that's why it just ends up being a strange plot device more than anything else. The team does go to the casino. So they're actually trying to go, I think, underground from casino to casino. And so at this point you have Apone and Hicks and Dietrich and Frost, and they're going through the hallway and you see the aliens start to uncurl from the ceiling. Oh no, I'm sorry. Well, I got confused for a second.
No, this is it. This is
that is the scene. So just take the opening, like when they go into the
they're going into the atmosphere processing center.
Yeah.
They're searching for the colonists. They're dropping neon sticks like the colonial marines are dropping flares to mark the way. Yeah, they're walking through the sleeping shamblers, right? But that's just the aliens who they're...
The sleeping aliens.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the same thing.
What you have is you have one character who... I mean, looks exactly like Vasquez. She gets separated because Martin sends her off course purposely because he's trying to, this is where he's starting to do bad things to the team, or, you know, that he has ulterior motives.
They set this up earlier with him and Chambers, with Martin and Chambers, because on the way in, he's like, oh, hi, I've not introduced myself. She goes, stay the hell away from me. Immediately, I think of Ripley saying to Bishop, stay the hell away from me, Bishop.
Yeah.
Yep. So it's just like more aliens. It's just... You hear these lines of dialogue and you're like, I know that.
Well, and then of course she goes full Vasquez. There is a moment that is just like the Let's Rock where she pulls out her machine gun.
And she just starts spinning around.
And mowing people down. I mean, it is exactly what Vasquez does with the long gun. She has the red headband on, so she's looking just like Vasquez. And even technically at the end, she almost dies like Vasquez does. She fights her way out dramatically through a very close corridor situation and is able to like mow down 15, 20 zombies. She gets out in the hallway and she has a chance to make a run for it. And then for whatever reason, at that point, she succumbs to the zombies. It's a very strange death scene. If you think about how she was just handling herself, to the fact that she jumps through a window and she's laying on the carpet and all of a sudden she's like, oh, I can't do anything anymore. What? And you have the team to back her up at that point.
That's what really didn't work and just confused me. Right. She makes this amazing escape. She crashes through a window into the hallway where the rest of the team is now. Goose is her friend. He wants to help her. And Martin grabs his arm and pulls him back. No, she's gone. Quite clearly not gone.
She's not gone. And not only that, everybody in this movie, by the way, is a sharpshooter, which is pretty amazing. With a handgun, you have people 30, 40 yards away. No problem. Five shots, five headshots in a row. Bam, 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 bam. So you figure if these guys are that good, that they easily could have taken care of the zombies in the hallway and rescued her. Comes across as a very strange death scene.
Yeah.
It takes her character, the way that they just developed her character for the previous 2 minutes, in a totally opposite direction. I don't think that one works at all.
To your sharpshooter point, why do you recruit a guy who's quite clearly an amazing sharpshooter with semi-automatic pistol and then give him an automatic rifle? You know, see him holding that thing? It's like he's holding it sideways.
Right.
He quite clearly does not know how to use an automatic rifle.
In his YouTube videos, he was shooting 3 zombies in the head at one time.
Play to your strengths.
Yeah.
Give him a pistol.
They get to the final casino and they clear out a few zombies that are in the lobby. They're shooting at that point. So you figure that other zombies would probably hear them and come to them, but for whatever reason, they don't.
Well, you know, it's a big hotel.
But then Batista's daughter like spins and confronts the coyote.
What happened to him? So they took him to the Olympus, shoved him in a room with 2 other people. The leader, he came for them one by one. If my guy hadn't escaped, he would have been next.
So that's a pretty common theme for you, leaving people behind.
Do you think I enjoy having to leave people? I'm doing what I can to make things right.
But it's a completely weird, unearned moment between these two characters. They try these emotional beats throughout the movie, and every single one of them fails.
Well, it's unnecessary, because I don't really care. This woman, Gita, goes to the coyote and has her take her into the city, right? So that she can get money, steal money from the casino so she could buy her way out of the camp. That's the whole setup there. Lily had no idea that Gita had children. And she's like, oh, well, if I had known she had children, I never would have took her in. Okay, whatever. Just cut all that crap. We don't need it.
It's completely ineffective character exposition.
Yeah.
It doesn't make you want to dislike the coyote more. It does nothing for the characters. It's just so stupid. When they enter the casino, there are some blueprints of the safe just randomly sitting on one of the casino tables. And so somebody immediately puts together, oh, there was another team here ahead of us.
Let's not get other teams here before us. Do you know anything about this?
That's news to me.
So you have a situation where the team on the mission encounters another team that was sent in before them without their knowledge. Makes me think of another movie. What is that? Oh, yeah. Poor Jim Hopper. Predator.
I knew this man. Green Berets out of Fort Bragg. Now, what the hell were they doing here?
I don't know, Dutch. This is inhuman. Nobody told me there was an operation in this area. They shouldn't have been here. Unless somebody sent them.
That, to me, I think was an interesting idea that they didn't really explore too much. The fact that the Tanaka had sent in multiple teams over and over.
So they end up, when they get down to the safe, they do find the remains of another team that was there. Yeah. So what happened to those guys? Did they get locked in and die? There's no explanation as to why they're dead.
No, there's not. Because they hadn't even made it to the quote-unquote non-lethal countermeasures.
There's a kind of a strange moment where suddenly they have Martin. You know, he's working for Tanaka. He's the security guy. And he's going to give an access card to the safecracker so that he can open up a door. And he pulls out a card and he goes to hand it to him. And then he lets go and it snaps back because it's connected to his chest via a lanyard. And then he actually gives him the real card. So just randomly, they take Martin, you know, the bad guy. They give one little joke about it, like, I don't understand that character choice. I don't. I'm just like, why? Why is that there? I don't know.
It is kind of weird because he is supposed to be the villain. Garrett Dillahunt is actually very good with comedy. I think they wanted to have him have some comedic moments. Much like if you're casting Carter Burke in Aliens, you get yourself a comedian to play the role.
But you mentioned Carter Burke's. They are at one point talking about the aliens. They basically say the exact same line from Aliens.
You have no idea what I've seen in those camps, what those people have to do to survive. At least within these walls, the rules are clear. You don't see them fucking each other over.
And all you need to add to that is, for a fucking percentage, and you actually have the direct copy of the line from Aliens. I mean, it's exactly the same.
You know, Burke, I don't know which species is worse. You don't see them fucking each other over for a goddamn percentage.
I was like, wait, what? That was good. Zack Snyder has an obvious love of Aliens and of these movies. He's peppering this stuff in there. I don't know. Maybe it's like unconsciously. I hope it's consciously and that he's just trying to share this good stuff with young kids of today who care more about zombies than classic movies.
At the very end, what he should do as a public service is, please, if you enjoyed this movie, go watch the original better version of this movie. Aliens, Predator, Die Hard.
As the movie kept going on and on, it gets more and more like Aliens. There's one point, we'll get to it, but where I was, I know the rest of the movie now. I know what's going to happen.
It goes to another emotional sequence where, so Dave Bautista is on the roof and he's putting gas in the generator and he has an exchange with his daughter. This is where she's saying, oh, I hated you for so long, Dad. And he's like, oh, sorry, I knifed your mom in the head or whatever their exchange is. It's
sorry, killed your mom, Kate.
But it feels like that scene runs on for like 12 minutes is what that feels like. And the whole time, Dave Bautista is dumping gas out of one can. It must be like a 37-gallon gas can that he had. But the dialogue in that scene is, oof, super cringeworthy.
You weren't there, Scott. You didn't call. You didn't visit. You didn't talk about it. You didn't comfort me.
Yeah, you're right. It's because every time I looked at you, I just saw her. And I hurt like hell. I hurt like hell. And then when I tried to come back around, it seemed like you didn't want me there, so I assumed you should just stay gone. I mean, maybe there's a chance we could still...
Still what?
I don't know.
That might be the worst scene in the movie, in my opinion.
I think he had to be dumping the gas so that it would irritate his eyes so he could cry.
That doesn't work. Again, the relationship between Bautista and his daughter is forced at best.
One of the things that goes on like right around there, they find the helicopter and then task Peters with getting up and running again. But the first time she sees it.
What a hunk of junk.
Right, so it's Star Wars.
Combo of Luke.
What a piece of junk.
Again, Han saying, she's the fastest hunk of junk in the galaxy. Yeah.
There's your Star Wars call out. In a minute, we'll get to Raiders of the Lost Ark. You see the coyote and Martin go out, and this is where Martin's alternative plan is revealed. He ends up attacking the witch, and what he does is he cuts her head off. What's funny about this scene, too, is he cuts her head off, and he doesn't seem to think about what's going to happen after he does it, right? He seems surprised when the zombies eventually come rushing out. He does cut her head off, and her head's still alive.
To be honest, I don't think he really understood that she was the zombie queen.
So he cuts her head off and sticks it in a bag. And his whole plan is really that he wants to bring it out because he believes the military, which is, of course, in this case, a stand-in for Weyland Yutani,
exactly,
can use the technology to, you know, create ultimate weapons. He's trying to bring home the xenomorph, in this case, in the form of the alien queen's head. I'm sorry, the zombie queen's head.
Sort of rolling my eyes when I'm saying this. Oh, Burke, you're such a douchebag. I have a question about the whole zombie WMD idea. What he quite clearly says is that the real purpose of this expedition is to come back with, I guess, zombie DNA. The zombie head apparently is worth 10 times $200 million that they're supposed to be stealing. Keep wondering, well, if it's like 10 times that amount, why not just go in and kill a zombie? What do you need the money for? This doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. Right. Why this elaborate ruse? And I guess if your purpose is sort of twofold, get a zombie head and get the money, you know, why does Martin fuck over the team? The team's got the money.
Why did you send in a previous team that did make it all the way to the
And
safe?
Why didn't they bring back any zombie DNA?
And that's the problem with this moment, is it completely undoes the scope or the intent of the team in this movie. There's no point in what they're doing. And also, there's no point in having them do that just so this guy can do the alternate plan. It doesn't, none of it makes any sense. No. I mean, if they just said, hey, I'll give you guys $10 million, go in there, the coyote will take you where the witch is. Great, they snag the witch right in the beginning, and they're out of there in 10 minutes. It's over with.
They snag the witch, and he could have just been at that point and said, I'm right next to the exit here. I'm going to take off with the head. I'm going to go hand it off, you know, secure it to someone on my team, and then I'll come back in. I'll help the rest of the team finish the job trying to secure the money. The number one goal, hey, that's achieved. It made no sense to me.
Basically just kicks the chair out from underneath the narrative of this movie. At that point, this whole team is in there risking themselves for no real reason, ultimately.
It was like, oh, hey, oh, remember in Aliens when Burke fucked over the team and like locked them out? He's like in the room with an alien and then the alien kills him. Let's do that with Martin. He'll lock the team out and then he'll go on his own into the casino and then he gets mauled by a zombie tiger.
Again, the zombie tiger and the zombie tiger mauling. Best thing in this movie.
The effects in that were absolutely fantastic. We see his face and his neck after being mauled by the tiger before he's killed. I mean, it was like, oh Jesus, that's awful.
Yeah, that's pretty good actually.
Really good makeup effects.
It's a good effect. He's ripped up pretty good. I do like at one point they show the tiger just chilling on a car hood at one point. Like it just kind of settles in like a cat. I don't know if you spotted that before the end.
At some point that the tiger was doing something like, was it yawning or stretching or maybe like taking a bath. And I'm thinking, well, that's exactly what a tiger would do. But would a zombie tiger do that? Would a zombie tiger really care about hygiene? What, you know, would he roll around in a patch of sun or something like that? I don't know. I don't think a zombie tiger would.
Thinking about it, if the zombie disease got into animals, that might even be a much bigger problem than if it made it into humans.
That would be very bad.
Think about like zombie gorillas coming at you.
How about this, Dave? Zombie huntsman spiders.
I think we would have to take off and nuke Australia from orbit just to be sure to continue the aliens theme.
Sorry, Australia. We're going to lose our finest actors.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Anyway, so they get to the safe in the casino and they have a truly hilarious sequence where there are countermeasures that have been set up to protect against people getting into the safe. And really what they're doing is, this is just somebody who wanted to replay Raiders of the Lost Ark for a few minutes. I think the dart is even the same color as the dart that comes out in Raiders of the Lost Ark, where he puts the torch down.
I think the darts had some fanciful tails, like red tails on them. I don't think they had that in Raiders of the Lost Ark, but it was quite clearly the whole thing is set up as an homage to Raiders of the Lost Ark.
One little funny gag there, so Vanderho is actually getting zombies, so he's recruiting zombies to bring down to try to activate the countermeasure. So that part of it I thought was pretty funny.
That was good.
And then he microwaves a hand to warm it up, and he puts it in front of the zombie's face, and he throws it down there so the zombie goes walking towards it. The first set of countermeasures are these darts that come out, right? So the tranquilizer darts. But then the second countermeasure is basically something out of a video game where these two walls just basically come together and smash the zombie.
You forgot the machine guns.
Oh, yeah. And there were machine guns, too. Yeah. So there were wall-mounted machine guns. Very similar to, I think, when Superman tried to get into Lex Luthor's hideout in the original Superman. That's kind of what's happening there.
The walls completely smashing the zombie. Oof. That's got to hurt. Gooey.
That effect is pretty good too. Then the walls pull back a little bit and you see the smashed zombie, just the viscera sort of hanging between the two pillars, and that I thought was pretty funny. I like that. For whatever reason, randomly the safe cracker starts using dialogue about opening the safe is going to be about death and rebirth, and Vanderho responds is like, that's deep, dude, I can dig it. Totally pointless dialogue. So it doesn't fit their characters at all.
Less dialogue, more music. You know, when they first see the vault, you hear the strains of Siegfried's funeral music from Wagner's Götterdämmerung. the Ring trilogy, and I'm just like, I'm in heaven. Zack Snyder and I told you this over text, that Zack Snyder and I have a very definitive love Wagner. Of Siegfried's Funeral Music, which is an homage to Excalibur. It's such amazing music.
President decides that he does not want to drop the nuke on Vegas on July 4th, and so they decide to just speed it up by a day. You decide you're just going to accelerate the deployment of a nuclear bomb by 24 hours. Would you ever pull a nuke explosion forward? I mean,
you would just
come
set
on.
It back one day. Let's do it on the 5th, not...
Exactly.
Oh, hey, everyone. You know, yeah. The 4th doesn't work after all. Let's just do it in 2 hours.
They ask the safecracker how long it's going to take, and he says it'll take me 30 minutes. And then Batista looks at his watch and says...
How long will take you to open it?
30 minutes.
Okay.
30 minutes of silence. Silencio.
30 minutes, that's not bad.
Nuclear bomb drops on us in 1 hour and 20 minutes.
Right. Which gives us an hour to get to the helicopter and get out of here. It's plenty of time.
Plenty.
So they just cut 10 minutes off. I just thought that was funny because if you know when a nuke's coming in, every minute counts. So I just think I thought that was pretty funny.
Oh, no, you don't have an hour. You don't have an hour.
Right. It means you only have 50 minutes.
I was thinking it was the other way.
I can do the math on that one.
You'd want to give yourself a 10-minute buffer, you know, have an extra 10 minutes. Yeah.
No.
You think when the nuclear weapons are involved, you really got to do the math correctly.
Everybody synchronize watches now. We got an extra 10 minutes. That was an amusing piece of dialogue. And then when they do open the safe, straight out of the Nakatomi Plaza safe room.
Yeah, but the problem with this is that it had none of the impact. In Die Hard, it's great. The music swells. It's fanfare and reverence. The vault door opens and there's a bright shining light. This is dull. The music, which is great music, by the way, it's more Siegfried's funeral music, and it's the swelling part of it, but the volume's down low. It's more on what the actors are saying. Big high moments don't correspond to the opening of the vault door. The opening of the vault door is really sort of like, let's just push this thing open. It's not this momentous occasion. Right. I felt so let down.
And you think it's going to pay off to something bigger. And then it's super flat. It's strange to take the time to set up the vault for what it is because they reference it. They reference the blueprints. They show it at the end of the hallway. And then it just kind of, okay, it opens.
I know. But then they show them in the vault, making it rain with the dollar bills, the $100 bills and stuff. That's okay. They could have done it so much more. It could have been like this really great moment. I mean, you just opened the unopenable safe and now you've got $200 million sitting in front of you. This should be a highlight, but it's really kind of a low light in the movie.
I was wondering, you know, what does $200 million in $100 bills actually weigh? Just because I was curious about how much money would you actually be hauling out of there. And it's over 4,400 pounds.
So how much money did they steal out of the bank in Heat?
That was 12 million, I think.
They had three guys go in. They each had big like duffel bags, one on their back and then holding another one. Let's just call it 3 to 4 duffel bags. And that's 12 million. So you'd have like 30 or 40 duffel bags.
The Huey can lift about 5,000 is what it comes down to in terms of the load. Some people are going to get left behind if you want all that money. That's what it comes down to.
It would have been dicey, especially for that old helicopter. She could barely get that thing running.
So she was apparently a very advanced mechanic as well as a pilot. But again, I like her. She just had a fun on-screen presence. So yeah, she can do whatever she wants, especially within this universe. Because the other thing that happens right around this time is this is where the Zeus, the lead zombie, ends up putting on his helmet, which is pretty hilarious, although very practical. I'll give him that, right? Because it deflects the headshots, so good for him in terms of his thinking there. But it just looks goofy as shit. And he is riding now on a zombie horse. It's kind of a fun concept, but it just looks goofy as shit. It really does.
It does.
Can't even really say that there is an edge of cool to it. It's more an edge of lunacy. I'm not sure.
We sort of skipped over something. What set off Zeus? What made him so angry that he's going to lead his zombie army against these interlopers? Well, A, they killed his queen, but B, she was pregnant and he pulled out the fetus. Help. Wait, explain this, please.
They bring her body back, her headless body, and he digs his hands in and then he pulls out a fetus. And I don't know.
When he pulled it out, it was like sparkling blue. And then so is there some sort of zombie mythology here? Is this alien technology? Is it... Are the alphas, like, do they have blue sparkling blood? And why did they not really talk about this at all for the rest of the movie?
And why is it in there anyway?
I keep thinking that there's this whole zombie mythology that we're not finding out in this movie. It's going to be like in a sequel. That's the only thing I can think of. But it really sucks when you do this and then that's it. No more talk of that.
Yeah, doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, weird.
So Dave Bautista's daughter, like, suddenly she disappears. What Dave Bautista realizes is that she is going to try to go to another casino by herself, just walking around with a handgun, to go and rescue these people, the refugees that the coyote had brought in. So
not just another hotel, but the actual lair of the zombie army and the zombie king.
She's just going to walk over there. So that's, I mean, but the other thing that I love about this is they make a pretty big deal of showing you that when you go down to where the safe is, there's one elevator, people are in the hallway there, and that's where the safe is. And then suddenly Batista's daughter is able to just disappear. So didn't he walk past her on the way back up the hallway? Hey, Dad, I'm going to go to the other casino for a while.
You had this shot outside of the Hotel Olympus. Zeus is rallying all the zombie troops and they're pouring outside. And then all of a sudden this one zombie jumps on top of a car and like looks down through a window. And there in the cab of that car is Kate. And I'm like, what the fuck is she doing there?
Right.
This makes no sense to me at all.
Well, and the other thing that happens here quite randomly is, and I don't even know the character name that is in the hallway with Batista, the woman, the other woman.
Oh, Maria. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, poor Maria.
In kind of a surprise moment, a genuine surprise for the movie, a zombie jumps out of the elevator and ends up snapping her neck, basically almost turns her head completely around.
It was. He turned around 180 degrees, and she's still like, she's got a very disappointed look on her face.
That's sort of a cool effect, and it does catch you off guard. However, just prior to that, she turns around and ends up having this yet another forced emotional moment with Dave Bautista that they've done absolutely nothing throughout the rest of the movie to any way set up and justify.
I thought we could have had something. But then you just went away. It's just that seeing you again is just bringing it all back. And it's not that I've been waiting, you know, I haven't. I'm happy, you know. Well, I'm fine. I just thought that maybe...
I thought I fucked that up forever.
Forever is a long time.
She professes her love for him.
This movie has so many of those moments, man. Just
well,
bullshit forced emotional connections that are not in any way justified by the character's actions. It's dumb. So
I knew it was going there. She had a strong emotional connection to him because of everything that they've been through. And what I loved is that she professes her love to him and 10 seconds later, she gets killed. And I'm thinking, oh, what a cliche.
The surprise element of that I do think was kind of fun, that I enjoyed. The love thing is just totally unsupported by anything else in the movie.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense. So the bad guy does do the double cross, so he locks in the coyote and everybody else and stands there long enough to run through his whole bad plan really quickly before he leaves.
That's what villains do.
So he just breaks it down. He's like, yes, I was hired to do this and this and that. And he's like, well, hey, dude, why not just spend that 30 seconds getting an additional head start on the zombies, right? But nope, he has to stop and explain his plan. That does lead to him getting mauled by the tiger outside, which we already talked about. However, again, just more props for the tiger. We like the zombie tiger.
Back to the zombie WMD. He's explaining his plan. I have to question Tanaka on this. Why would anyone want to have their own zombie army? I feel like this is a really terrible idea. You really don't have a lot of control over them. In the pantheon of bad ideas, this is really close to the top.
Just like harvesting xenomorphs and letting them run wild.
Exactly. Or like, say, replacing all the copper piping in your apartment. Or you're renting, right? Yeah.
For whatever reason, like the big bad zombie shows up in the hallway and Vanderho decides that he's going to basically pull a Billy from Predator. Right? And instead of cutting his chest and standing on the log, he decides he's going to show his fists and the idea of getting into a fist fight against what has already been identified as a superhuman creature. And of course, he gets his ass kicked. Why they have him do that and why he would ever do that, and oh God, it's just so stupid. I mean, that's a comically stupid moment in this movie.
I'm glad you called that out because I hadn't really even thought of Predator, but it's so Predator.
Oh, it's totally Billy from Predator. It's exactly what it is.
That's awesome. And he doesn't even die, though. He doesn't get killed by Zeus because Dieter grabs him, right? And what does Dieter do?
Pushes him into the safe.
He locks him into the vault. And I'm thinking, thanks, Dieter. I mean, what's worse, being like bit and killed by a zombie or being turned into a zombie or being forever locked inside this vault and like starving to death?
Slow suffocation?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, of course, at that point, I'm thinking like, oh, well, nuclear blast. He gets out of the vault. He's got a chance of survival, but still, like, I'd be like, wait, don't lock that door. What are you doing?
There is one good moment. So they do make a run out of the casino. There's some good visuals here. Guzman ends up blowing himself up, and suddenly the grenades that he has on him must be incendiary grenades because it's quite the fiery explosion that goes up. But there is one moment where Batista is shooting all these zombies and he runs out of bullets. And instead of saying something dramatic, he just yells, fuck. And so I just really like that because that felt realistic to me. What would you say if you ran out of bullets when you're in the middle of a zombie fight? So I thought that was good.
I'd definitely say fuck, especially if I knew I was going to get killed and I had now had no way to, you know, take myself out.
It's down to Batista and the coyote. Like, those are the two that are left, and they get to the elevator.
I think you forgot to also just mention that Guzman dying was his own Aliens Gorman moment. Grenade strapped to his chest, and he's 50 zombies piled on him, and he takes them all out. Good stuff.
So the coyote and Batista, whatever. That dude,
Scott. Because he looks like a Scott. He looks like a Scott Ward.
Yeah, he doesn't look like a Scott Ward to me. But anyway, so they jump in an elevator, and there's a moment where they're going up, and of course, they're standing there, and you have a little of, you know, you have Culture Club that's playing. By the way, just go watch Deep Rising, where they did this with a girl from Ipanema. It's a much better version of this. It's beat for beat. It's the exact same scene. So this is lifted directly out of Deep Rising.
What is Deep Rising?
Oh, Deep Rising is Treat Williams and Famke Janssen wearing that red dress. It's a monster movie where they go on board a cruise ship and there are these tentacled creatures they have to fight. It's a really fun movie. Oh, I've
never seen it.
Oh, really?
No.
Oh,
never heard of it.
You should watch that.
I read this. The music that plays in the elevator is the same music that played in an elevator scene in Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead. I don't know if that's true. I haven't seen it, but okay.
Scott and the coyote get to the roof, and of course the helicopter is gone, and this is the exact moment where they're replicating Bishop flying the dropship and appearing on the platform at the last second. So
wait, is it that one? No, because no. So this is the first one where Lily sacrifices herself by taking out the queen's head. She tells Peters and Scott to take off at the helicopter without her. They do that. I don't know why she sacrificed herself. She has the head. Could have got in, backed into the helicopter, and they could have taken off. She could have just dropped it or something. But no, I don't know why she did that.
She's pinned to the wall with a piece of rebar, and I do like the fact that she's holding the head out over the ledge of the casino, and she drops the head. They show the head when it splats on the ground. It just gets mushed down to nothing. So I thought that was pretty good. I thought that was funny. It
kind of reminded me of David Letterman throwing watermelons off the side of the building, of the studio.
Exactly. Yeah. Love that.
This is where they're in the helicopter now flying away. And it's Ripley hatching the plan to go rescue Newt, to go back Newt. And so they fly to the other hotel, the Olympus, which is the lair of all the zombies or the atmospheric processing station. He goes down the elevator, in this case, a stairwell, but he's searching for his daughter, Newt. And it's all aliens again.
I jumped one helicopter.
I was a little confused too when I was thinking back through this because there's sort of two helicopter sequences.
Batista's daughter does have her showdown with the guy who was the bad or the evil guard that was sacrificed early on, and now he's an alpha. That's interesting too because I assumed that they were going to drag that out a little bit and have it be a little bit more of a longer conflict, but basically he just jumps and eats one of the two or one of the three survivors, and then he gets shot and that's it. So
poor Gita and the other woman who are being held captive there, because that other woman's like, oh, I'm rescued. And it's like, nope, you're dead.
So the hostages that they go to save, they only get, was it one out, I think, is the end result there.
They got Gita out, and then Gita died in the helicopter crash. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah. Well, so they get to the roof, and this is where you have the aliens Bishop moment because they get to the roof and the pilot is gone and the helicopter's gone, and then of course, and at this point actually I paused the movie and I texted Colin and I said, okay, so is this where the helicopter comes up and then they say that platform was too unstable, I had to take off? Because that's exactly what this moment is. It is so aliens.
Zeus is coming up at the in the elevator, just like the queen is coming up in the elevator.
Right.
Basically, we're fucked. The helicopter's gone or the dropship is gone. And here out comes Zeus or the alien queen. And it's like, we're going to die. And then all of a sudden, here comes the helicopter. And it's Bishop in the dropship. And they jump onto the helicopter. And then they're about to get away. But then, oh, now we got a stowaway. Just like in Aliens.
Yep.
And what are they doing? They're trying to outrun the impending nuclear missile explosion. Nuke them from orbit. It's just, wow. It was just like so blatant.
So when they're going to go to the other casino, you know, Batista's talking to the pilot and she has this line of dialogue and she says something like, God damn it, man. If we do this, you'd better find her. It's a very clunky delivered line of dialogue. Yeah. So yeah. Okay. And you would expect that if you're going there, you do want her to actually find her. So
they're in the chopper and they're trying to outrun an impending nuclear disaster. Now you have your standard fist fight with the villain.
For what they've set up as Zeus's abilities earlier in the movie as the super zombie, the fact that Dave Bautista is able to handle him one-on-one and then just dispatches him with a very simple gunshot to the head is kind of strange, but whatever.
Yeah.
Because why not just, I mean, if this was the real situation, if this guy could be felled by a single shot to the head, it could have happened at any time. The mythology around the super zombie and their abilities, it shifts over the course of the movie.
Yeah, and I also have to say that Peters is doing some pretty heavy aerial acrobatics with that helicopter. I don't think that helicopter, that specific one with all the black smoke that was coming out, is really going to be able to handle that. But
It's
a movie.
It's a movie. By the way, there is one other moment where it's Batista looking at his daughter and they have a moment where they're gazing at each other's eyes and they kind of hold that for 15 or 20 seconds. And this is when they're getting on the helicopter. If a nuke is coming in, I'm thinking you might want to speed that up a little bit, right? We can gaze into each other's eyes wistfully after the helicopter is in the air as opposed to waiting and doing it right now on the roof of the casino.
I was thinking the same thing, except I was thinking, have you guys not seen Aliens? Don't you know that the queen is coming up right now?
The queen is like, coming. You gotta get going. Come on.
Get on the fucking helicopter and go.
So they fly away and you see the nuke come in and Vegas gets nuked. And of course that knocks the helicopter down. Batista has been bitten by a zombie. So, and then his daughter waits for him to transform and then shoots him in the head. And I think everybody else dies, right? I mean, I think everybody's pretty much, yeah.
This is my like, what moment? Like my WTF ending. What a huge letdown. Basically, everyone died. What exactly did this accomplish? Because everyone on the team essentially died, including Scott, who's the head of the team, right?
Right.
The only one who really made it out was Kate, and her goal was to get Gita out, which she did, but Gita died in the helicopter crash. Nobody got any money except, I guess, maybe a couple $100,000 that he had squirreled away in his pants, and he gave that to Kate before he dies, and that money was... He says this money should get his kids out of the camp. Okay, that's lame. Yeah. Apparently he knew that, well, Gita's kids are going to need this money because they no longer have a mother. And what happened to Peters? Did she live or die? Does anyone care what happened to Peters? I know you do, Dave, because you like Peters, but nobody lives.
Nope.
Until the very end. Vanderhoe actually made it out. He comes out of the nuclear rubble. He made it out of the vault. Thank God the nuke took down the vault. If a nuclear blast just completely destroys the hotel and opens up the vault, how exactly did he survive? I think he would have been crushed.
The amount of rubble that would be piled up on top of him at that point is just, it's ludicrous to think that he would have ever, you know, could have escaped. But then I'll put all that aside and let's say that he found a corridor and a way to crawl out.
Yeah.
When he gets to the surface, he's walking where a nuclear blast just went off, a minutes ago, hours? How long do you think he was in that safe?
Maybe let's say it took him about an hour or two to get out.
He's already been crawling through irradiated landscape for an hour to begin with, right? Then he gets all the way up to the top. Things are remarkably cool for having been nuked. Beyond that, let's just talk about the level of radiation. How many steps does he actually take on the surface before he collapses and his body liquefies?
No, seriously, this is supposedly a small tactical nuke. Well, it took out a whole city, so it couldn't have been just like a super small one. Definitely dying of radiation poison or sickness within a couple of days. The fact that he's able to then walk out of there, carrying all these bags of cash, find a farm with a car that he could steal. I don't buy any of this.
No, it's completely nonsensical.
It's like the second ending, and now we're following Vanderho. He's got all his money. He then drives to an airport and rents a private jet. And this I'm thinking like, okay, well, this sort of makes sense. I'm the only one who survived. I got all this cash. He's not like an ex-mercenary, so I mean, I'm sort of surprised that he knows these things. But I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to rent myself a private jet. I'm going to fly to Mexico City. I keep wondering, did he really think, better bring my passport? So I don't know what he thinks he's going to do when he gets to Mexico City.
I'm assuming that you only have this in here on the off chance that this movie is wildly successful and you want to set up a sequel where plane lands in Mexico City and the infection is allowed to spread again. And then you basically do it again.
You know, he gets on the plane and then he's like feeling woozy and he goes into the bathroom and he notices that he actually has a bite.
I assume that they were just referencing the fact that he had the radiation poisoning. I mean, when you look at him, when he's looking at himself in the mirror, you see patches of skin that are pretty red. So I kind of thought they were going that direction. But then, of course, he does have the bite.
Yeah. And then the movie ends with him looking in the mirror and saying, fuck. It ends with a thud. Why? Yeah. It's sequel bait. It's like they know what they'd want to do in a sequel. I don't think that it's been greenlit, but definitely have an idea of what's going to happen.
Let Tig Notaro survive then. Let her take another run at it.
I don't think she's survived, but it wasn't conclusive that she died. It
wasn't conclusive because she was laying there with her. She still had her helmet on. She could have just been unconscious. One random question. Do you think Luxor paid for product placement? Because you see an awful lot of casinos they go by where the win has clearly been changed. Caesar's Palace is Olympus or whatever. But then at the end when the helicopter is racing out, you see a very, very clear Luxor. Like it is actually the Luxor versus some made up hotel name.
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe they just said we'll be in it. Whereas the others were like, you're going to destroy and make fun of Las Vegas? No, we don't want to be in that.
I think that I have reached the end of everything I wish to talk about this movie from a progression standpoint. So this would be just kind of random questions or anything else you have to talk about.
Random question. Do zombies innately know how to do parkour, or were these like people who knew how to do parkour in their human lives and they before they're being turned into zombies?
I think when you become an alpha zombie, you also somehow automatically generate some parkour. It's kind of like in The Matrix when they're loading Neo up with all his skills. Apparently, when you're an alpha, right. You become an alpha, it also just like it programs parkour into your brain.
Do you think Neo, like, you know, was sitting in the chair and all of a sudden like, and he opens his eyes and he says, I know parkour. No, I think we actually hit all of my questions. So, Dave, I think we rolled through it. I think we got everything that I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, roll to your closing thoughts. Like, what's your summary and letter grade?
This is what I expected from a Netflix movie. Cavalcade of gun porn and zombie porn. Not actual zombie porn.
Nobody wants to. Well, actually, I was going to say nobody wants to see that. I'm like, oh, no.
Zombie porn would be really, really gross. Although apparently that was in an early script where zombies raped women, thus having hybrids. I don't know. Thank God they didn't go that route. But it's basically, it's what I would expect from a high-budget Netflix movie. They really need to spend more money on the script. Oh, I will say, I did read somewhere that the guy who wrote Dawn of the Dead for Zack Snyder, that he was originally going to help write this movie, but then got pulled onto some other project. I'm thinking maybe that's where things went wrong, because Zack Snyder wrote this. If it had a better writer, it could have been A, shorter, B, made a lot more sense, been a lot more engaging. What this movie has going for it is just, it's a lot of brain dead fun. I'll give it that. You speed through some of the emotional scenes. You can just skip those completely and move on to the action.
All right, what's your letter grade?
My letter grade is probably a B-, just for like all the different ripoffs or call-outs to all these other movies and the fact that I took about 16 pages of notes. So I must have liked it in some way. So I'll give it a B-.
There are some interesting concepts and some interesting moments. So again, shout out for the zombie tiger for sure. While the visuals are done pretty well, there's a whole bunch of character actions and character choices that are pretty stupid. And in particular, the emotional beats and the emotional relationships that they attempt to set up within the characters or between the characters, it doesn't work at all. It lands really, really hard, and it comes across as super forced and goofy. And you have at least three or four of those. They're given too much emphasis in the movie is the other problem too, right? I mean, when you pull away from the zombie action, you're sitting there and Batista's having this heart-to-heart with his daughter, really spending a lot of time in that interaction, and it's completely pointless and irrelevant and in no way justified. So some of the zombie fighting and the zombie scenes are staged well. Again, I actually do think that Snyder is good when it comes to visuals and music. I would say that I'm still a fan of him as a director. But as a writer, if you look at that, if you look at this, and you look at Sucker Punch, two examples of his writing, it's not good. This is not a movie that you're probably going to watch more than once. I'm saying that as an old dude, but this is not particularly compelling, and it feels very by the numbers. So I'm going to go ahead and give this a straight C. And I think that's almost being slightly generous, because some of the stuff they do, like the putting the cape and the helmet on the leader of the bad guy zombies, is just at that point, it's the whole thing just seems pretty...
Oh, well, now that you say I have to change mine to a C+.
Okay.
because at that point, it did like loudly groan.
Over the top. I'm like, oh, yeah. Jesus Christ. This is just, I mean, where is this going? So, yeah. Not particularly compelling. I guess my recommendation would be to watch the original, which is Aliens. It's a much better movie as opposed to this one. Or if you're going to watch a zombie movie, I recommend Return of the Living Dead or one of the original Romero films over this one. Let's go back and watch Snyder's Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah, I was just about to suggest that. I'm game.
I still consider myself a Snyder fan. I just don't think that this movie was terribly well put together.
Yeah.
And I think it suffers.
Agreed.
Anything else you want to say?
Nope, that was it.
Okay. Well, we hope you enjoyed our, I don't know what I would call this conversation.
Our beatdown?
Yeah, well, it wasn't quite a beatdown. I guess it was an ongoing comparison to better films along the way, because that's really what this movie is. Again, recommendation, go watch Aliens, go watch Predator, go watch Deep Rising, go watch Die Hard, maybe even go watch Heat if you just need a good heist movie instead of this. But if you want to watch a couple hours of sort of mindless zombie escapism, it's not as if this is a horribly bad movie. It's just not terribly good. And with that, I guess we will say that this is the Real DMC Podcast, signing off.
Goodbye, everybody. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye. Watch out for the tiger.
Car.
All right.
And then we find out as they leave, she's going into that hotel because she's trying to find Gita. Or is she trying to find Sheeta?